So the theme being children of light, we have displayed before you the shiniest, brightest lights of our community. So just bask in that. You may learn something. No. We are all from very different walks of life, and we're all just going to take 20 seconds, no more, to just give us a few words of introduction before we roll on while I set up. Go.
Pardon me.
Yep. Who are you? What do you do? Where are you from?
Hi. I'm Joella. I am from the Manawatū originally. I'm a lawyer by profession, and also, as you saw this morning, do some worship stuff at church. So, and I've got two kids and a husband.
I'm Kirk. I'm from New Zealand. I'm also white and well-to-do. I don't really know how to... I make coffee for work.
I'm David. I'm an industrial designer. I'm South African born, which means I shouldn't be here. But I've been here. I've been in New Zealand for long enough to get on the board.
I'm Amber Jane. I'm Jonathan's wife and Nino and Vinny's mum. And I am from Kapiti. I grew up in Paikakariki. And I'm a photographer and a stay-at-home mum. And, yeah, that's me.
And I'm Caleb. I'm married to Rachel. I've got 2.5 kids, and I also work on the worship leading on the worship band. And I am in media industry. I'm a designer, and that's us. Also, white and well to do. Thanks, Kirk. That's a punchline. Right. So I figured, like, you know, you're all great Christians, so you won't know this concept of the drinking game, right? But just to give you some insights into the personality, whenever we have something happen, maybe we should have a chocolate or something. Whenever, I don't know, Kirk swears, he's promised to be good, but you never know. Amber Jane, if she cries, have 2 chocolates. Could happen, I've heard. David wanted to have a sexy intro song when he came down. So, and if Joella looks a little bit like asleep or something, she's probably just in the Holy of Holies still, because she just literally stepped off the stage. So before we go, I just wanted to give a shout out. Well, she's tired. She's a mum. And on that note, actually, church mums, Mother's Day on Sunday is a terrible idea, because our worship leader was a mum, backup singer was a mum, Angie was here working in the mum. All the mums have been like, breakfast in bed, no. Even Rachel, I left and she had to do the washing and the kids and whatnot. So shout out to church mums. Getting it done. Cool. All right. So the theme of the last 4 weeks has been children of light. And when Chris sent me a list of all the things we should, you know, kind of be aiming to cover, the broad questions that we might want to talk about today, it was a huge list. And I was like, oh, great. This is awesome. To be asked to do a panel is fantastic. You'll know if we've kind of lost our way or anything, if I just start going, oh, okay. And how did you apply that spiritually? So when I say that, you know I've lost my thread. And I'm stalling, okay? Cool, so, chocolate drink, that's my one, yeah. So we've got a pathway of questions that will hopefully, we might go off script. If you've got any questions, please feel free, if they're really good ones, to share them, and we'll try and talk about them. But we're just people, and we're just going to have a little discussion here about, around the theme of children of light, but as it applies to our lives, as lights in darkness, as intentional livers, the decisions that we make around being children of light and how we carry it and what does it even mean. So to start, I thought, because it's quite a heavy, like, can stress you out a little bit, but the first thing I just want to go over really quick, what I'm even talking about on a very basic level. So what are the factors being a child of light? So the light is about the source, okay? Torch, it's the source. The source of light, is that us? It's not us. We're the reflectors. So I've got a mirror here. Is that reflecting up there? Into the darkness. It's not super dark, but you can see it, right? So source, Christ, the Word, Jesus Christ, our Lord, our Saviour. This is us down here. And our responsibilities are what we're going to talk about today. And then how how we answer those questions are going to be kind of around our responsibilities as a reflector. So basically the broad when I put the torch on you, go time. So the responsibilities of a reflector are to exist. So congratulations, you're all a third of the way there. Great. Fantastic. To be directed towards the source of light, right? To be directed towards Christ, and also to be reflective. So those are the three kind of broad avenues that we might be answering questions around today. So probably taking too long because Andrea wants to do something special for the mums at the end. Mums. Quite needy, aren't they? That was worth the laugh, though. Okay, cool. So, yeah, we might go off script and whatever. So what are the decisions or commitments we make to ensure that, like Esther and her environment and the story, when the moment of truth comes, when the question is asked, when the conflict arises, we have an answer already. We've already thought about it. That's what intentional living means as a Christian. That's what we're trying to achieve. Intentional living, it's a bit of a buzzword, but it's about responsibility and it's about decision-making, which is not very glamorous, I know, but we're going to talk it out. So what are my answers? What is my response? And what actions will best display Christ? How do I be reflective? What does it mean for how I live with my family and my environment and my different contexts? And what is the difference going to be? So, cool. The source of light. Jesus is described as the light of the world. Cool. The reflector. Live as children of life and light in Ephesians. Our responsibility for that. Being Christ-like. Being reflective. Cool. Nice and clear? I won't go labour it too much. Cool. So, we're all workers. Everybody's a worker. Mums at home are workers. Everybody's working. We've all got our context. We've all got our environments that we have opportunities to reflect that source into our lives. So, guys, just put your hand up if you've got an answer as I kind of move along. And otherwise, we might share different answers to different questions. But how important is it to be different in your environment as a Christian? Yeah?
I said very.
Very.
How important is it to be different? Well, if we're not... If the gospel is good news, then it's distinguishing itself from being bad news, right? So if to have light is good news, then that is the opposite of having darkness. And so, again, like, the distinguishes, like, night and day, right? It's who we are has to be different. I don't think there's an alternative.
I heard a really interesting radio article. When I drive to meetings and stuff at work, I often listen to the radio. And they were talking about teaching all religions in school, and the host was very, very anti the Christians who called in. And at one point, without saying it, reading between the lines, he was saying, if you guys would just tone down, we'd be all right with you. We'd be okay. We wouldn't pick on you. And I was thinking in the car, I was thinking, actually, that's the exact thing we can't do, that we can't water down what it is. And they were talking all about, let's teach all religions, and the Christians who rang in said, no. There only is one way, and it's getting this guy more and more irate. And I was thinking, but that's our problem. That's what we are. We say there's only one way, and that's our light shining and saying, well, we actually can't accept anything else.
I was sort of thinking about this because, I mean, there's lots of, good people around who aren't necessarily Christian. So sometimes we don't feel that much different, but it can be kind of context, like sometimes, because I've been in quite a few different workplaces in the last couple of years, and sometimes you just really get a sense of what you need to be, and you might not actually feel that different, but people, like, often at the end of when I leave somewhere, they might say, oh, you dealt with that well, or you just kept calm throughout that situation or something. And I think we do have a sense of the bigger picture. So sometimes we don't always feel that different, but I think we often are, but we're just not quite aware of it anyway.
Yeah, good. Anything to add? Cool. So what examples would you have of situations that keep cropping up in your life, whether it's at home or work or wherever, where you've had to think about and take a decision because you know that that's going to come again, maybe on Tuesday, Thursday, next month? So what kind of thinking have you put in place in your life to anticipate a conflict or an event? Does that make sense? Who's first?
Well, one of the most common ones with that is, especially when you're moving around, meeting new people, is you kind of hold back telling them who you actually are. And then the longer you hold that back, the less you can say it. So it's one of those things where you sometimes just have to go, if I see an opportunity just to let them know who I actually am, I'm just going to have to take it. Otherwise, I'm going to hide it and it's going to become a bit of a mission later on.
That's a good point, because you kind of, it's almost like the longer you leave it, the more you think, am I leaving this because I'm ashamed? Or am I trying to trick them because I think they will treat me different? And am I confident enough in who I am as a child of light to say I am a child of light, and not be afraid of saying, and by contrast, that means you're a child of darkness. You know, those kind of, that kind of thinking. That's really interesting. And I think most people would probably have had those thoughts in their workplaces where you're like, okay, when do I come out of the closet? It's too late.
I didn't even want to come on this panel. I hate talking in front of lots of people these days. I was thinking that recently, my whole life I've been a Christian, and when I was young I remember being sort of hesitant to tell people that I was, even though that was completely my life. And in more recent years, I think since having children and also getting to know certain people, I feel really more confident about who I am. And I meet people all over the show, I imagine all of you do, who are not Christians and who don't know about Jesus, and everybody is broken inside. Everybody's got bits of damage. You only have to scratch the surface to find the things that people are fearful about. And I find that if I'm very early on about telling people that I go to church, that they open up to me. And I don't know if it's because of that, but I think that they can see that there's something safe about somebody who's Christian to talk to about their stuff, because everybody has stuff. And my response to that is usually just to try and be grace. You know, Jesus has all the grace for us, and so I think we're meant to be like him. And so being gracious for people who are fearful, who are broken, then that's kind of our job.
Yeah. What I was thinking was that it's often our posture towards the how we approach that difference, as opposed to, like, I understand there can be the fear to not say who we are, but sometimes we're so put this, like, pressure on ourselves to be like, I have to be Christian all the time. Hey, you, I'm a Christian. Are you? And it's just becomes, yeah, you can become the slogan sort of Christian, where you wear it on your T-shirt and your baseball caps and what have you. But and I think what you touched on was grace, and that's the how we go about being a Christian. And I think if we are filled with that, then, like, I mean, there's those common surveys that we see where it's like, what are Christians known for? And it's not normally what we want to be known for that we are known for, right? And so if we're known to be condemning and mean and, you know, homophobic or what have you, then coming out and going, hey, I'm a Christian, can actually bring those connotations along with them as well. And so how we posture ourselves, I think, is incredibly important. So as an example, I was working next to a guy, Ben, and he is staunchly atheist, but he's the man, we get on real well. But he once asked me, so what's it like working with Scott? Because his band used to play at Scotty's venue, which was like a Christian venue. I don't know if that's even, I don't know how venue can be Christian, but anyhow. But he asked me, so what's it like working with Scott? And I was like, oh, what do you mean? And he's like, well, he's a Christian, isn't he? And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm one of those as well. But, like, I think he almost was taken aback because for the 3 or 4 weeks he had known me before then, I hadn't come across as those things that is commonly associated with. And so, and he would start giving me so much shit. Sorry, there you go. you know, about not being... Like, why could you believe this and have different arguments or what have you? But my last thing I wanted to be was combative, because I think that's often what Christians come across as combative and just wanting to score points and what have you. And so I think the posture that can often separate us and make us look more like Christ is that we're full of grace and that we are really quick to listen as opposed to necessarily just tell everyone how they're wrong. So... and I think that gives us a space through which we can speak. Without that, that voice isn't heard, even if we're yelling it at the top of our lungs. So.
I just thought I should be really honest and say I haven't been particularly good in my last couple of workplaces and talking about being a Christian. In fact, that's why I left. Because I was like, oh, they're going to find out. I guess it just didn't really come up, and then it does come to the point where you're like, oh, I don't really want to just come out and say it. But I know when I first became a Christian, when I was sort of, really got into it when I was like 17, and then I went to a student hostel, I was like, you know, everyone knew I was a Christian then, and I would just randomly talk to people about God, and I don't know, it's like, can you sustain that forever, or do you just kind of get into this, yeah, this is part of my life, but I'm not going to make a huge deal about it kind of thing? So I don't know, that's something I'm just kind of dealing with at the moment, how I can be a bit more natural in sharing my faith with people, I suppose.
I think sometimes too it's quite easy to underestimate, you know, you can kind of, I guess, pressurise yourself about what you do, but it's quite easy to underestimate the difference that what the things that you don't do make. Where, you know, you might have made a decision and it might not be, I'm going to do this, I'm going to, you know, do this, I'm going to, like, pray with that person in the lunchroom, or, like, I'm going to do that. But a lot of the small, small things that are just part of your internal culture that you just don't do, you know, you speak respectfully of women, or you don't curse, or you're not a drinker, or you don't... he took the opportunity that I was distracted and he just slipped it out. Very nice. Well played. But, you know, those things that you've internalized with layers and layers and layers and layers and years, and however long you have been a Christian, those kind of internalized decisions that you've been convicted of personally that manifest themselves as things that you just don't do, and you might not even be aware of them, they are often extremely loud to people who might not have ever come across that. And, like, I'm not, you know, for myself, I don't swear, but not looking at anybody, but that's, you know, I just don't, and I never did, and my parents never did, and it's just something internalised in me, which is, you know, of no greater or lesser value than anybody else's. But working in an environment like mine, I mean, I'm sure it's not any more special than anybody else's workplace, they're just full of cursing and swearing, and it's, I don't even think about it. I don't notice them doing it. I don't notice me not doing it. But often people notice me not doing it. So a lot of that stuff, that's a very obvious one, but a lot of that stuff really does make a difference. When the way you walk, the way you carry yourself, your responses to conflict, your responses to an unreasonable person above you or below you, that kind of stuff. Even in, you know, even in family situations, the way you react to your children, the way you respond to your spouse, the way you, conflicts. There's conflict everywhere in the way you approach it, and the internalized stuff that Christ has done in you is often more powerful than the stuff you think you have to achieve to tick the boxes of being a visible Christian. So often your light is brighter than you even know it is. But the point is, when you're standing in the light, you know, if you're standing in the light, it's all around you. And it's more and most visible to those who are in the darkness. Does that make sense? Cool. So, can you just hold that for a second? Logged out. Yep.
Tell funny story.
Yeah, joke. So, is there an example of a moment in your life where you can either go two ways, where an event happened and you knew, okay, I have to do something here. You know, I have to, this is actually one of those ones where I need to say something, or I need to do something, or I need to move, or something like that. And I'll just start, I'll give you one of my own just to spin your wheels a little bit. I'll give you an example of something I did when I nailed it and then when I completely botched it. So I work in newspapers, I work in newsrooms, and newsrooms are full of extremely liberal, super liberal people and very, very, very small amount of Christians. And they're all fantastic. I love all of my colleagues everywhere I've worked. Brilliant, brilliant people. But often on different topics, you can be absolutely polar opposites. And because the pace that newsrooms go at, you often don't have the chance to stop and talk about stuff. You don't have the chance to sit and have an hour lunch and just chat, you know, and build up a really great relationship. And so often you've got to be quite quick. So two examples from my life, just to kind of spin some ideas in all of us. There was once where we were talking about something and there was a story about something. It was abortion related, and I just was sitting there talking about something, and often you don't have the time, because you're on a million deadlines, you don't have the time to start big discussions. So it's just a very fast-paced kind of environment. And so when you do, you've got to be quite sure of yourself. We were talking about abortion. There was a story about abortion. And I was sitting there, and it was really close to deadline, and I just knew I just had to say something. And it was about, someone was going off about something, and I disagreed strongly. And I thought, right, okay, God said, right, no, this is one of those times you need to say something. So I said something. I said, actually, you know what? I have a huge problem with that. In the middle of this discussion, there's about five people just like all on one team. And I stood up and said, actually, guess what? I'm on the polar opposite end of that team. I'm like on the other end of that team. And I was just like, it was quite intimidating, and because they're all very clever as well. and I did that, and then somebody else did it. And then somebody else did it. And then another person did. And it wasn't like I was trying to start gangs or teams, but it was amazing the effect of me saying, I've got a problem with that. And it's like a deal breaker as well. Like, and it was really interesting in this liberal environment where we like to discuss everything and we have points of view and stuff. And it was welcomed, you know, and it was the fear in my mind and the intimidation in my spirit that was making me feel anxious about it. And it was a really simple thing. Like, it's not a big one, but it was at the time, and it was for me, but it was really interesting to see the flow-on effects of that. Conversely, so that was like, yeah, nailed it. Conversely, a couple of weeks ago, there was a flashback story we were doing in the paper from a story maybe 20 years ago about the Virgin Mary and the condom artwork. You'll remember it well, at Te Papa, and it was a Friday. Friday's our busiest day. We have a lot of weekend papers. Was very, very busy. I had sick people on my team. I had people on leave, and it was like one of those hideous days. And this job came across my desk, and it was to lay out this page about this artwork. And I just felt sick. And I just didn't want to do it, and I really didn't want to do it. And I didn't even know a whole lot about it because I was young at the time and I wasn't from Wellington. And all I knew was that I just did not want to do this. And I did it. Absolutely did it. You know, I just got on with the job, pushed it through, and then got on to the next job. And at the time, again, the pace is such that you don't labour over it and agonise. But I really regret doing that. I really regret not saying, I don't really want to handle this one because of this reason. Because this is a, you know, this is a sacred topic for me, and I'm not afraid to say it. And I didn't do that. And it's kind of, it's that the value we have on these things, is it real or not? You know, and sometimes it just has to be super real and go, this is a sacred person, you know, this is the mother of Christ, this is, without making it too big of a deal, this is my bottom line, can you give this to someone else or can I pass it off to someone? Anybody else?
This is sort of a much smaller example, but I found that since having children, I've had to make decisions about how I respond to certain situations because of them rather than just because of my own Right. So recently we had the kids at the end of term, I think they get a treat day where they get to watch a movie at school, and there was a list of movies provided, and of course on the list there were a bunch of really innocuous movies, but there was also Harry Potter, and I've done this whole thing about working out how I feel about things like Harry Potter and other things with fantasy and witchcraft and what have you. And on the list you can tick which things you don't want your child to see. And it's a really quiet stand to make. And so I was happy to tick at that point the Harry Potter box. I don't want my child to see that, at least at this stage. And probably 3 or 4 years ago, I would have felt weird about that. But I think because I've spent some time really considering what my values are for my family and where I kind of draw the line, then I was really happy to tick that box. And I've talked about it with Nino, who was the one that could have been watching that movie, and he understands and he's good with it. So I don't have any conflict at home about that. It's not a big issue, but I am discovering that all over the show, suddenly there's little things like that that I have to make a stand on, things like Halloween, things like, I don't know, any kind of... There's a lot of pop culture stuff that kind of comes into our kids' world that I don't care about it, but my kids really care about it, and so I have to be drawing this line all the time. And I think when you've got responsibility for that for your own children, it brings another whole level of realness to it. Certainly before we had children, I've watched Harry Potter, I've read them, I know all about it, but I don't want that for my children, certainly at this stage. I think that one of the things, like what you were saying about the virgin in a condom issue, sometimes other people can step up and do that job for you, so you might not feel like you're strong enough to deal with something at the time, but I actually think that God's bigger than that, and he's got it covered, and so I have a story about that. My dad got arrested for protesting that and won a lawsuit about that issue. So he did the fight for you that day.
Okay. I don't have any sort of specific examples that I can really give, but I think there's a kind of broader thing about how you live ethically and how you are in your workplace, and something I've really been thinking about a lot lately is that we're actually a blessing in our workplaces or in our homes or in our mother's groups or dad's groups or wherever we gather. And just by making those decisions to act ethically and working out kind of what the most appropriate course of action is, it's surprising actually how much of a blessing. And wherever you are might not realise that, but actually... just by you making those conscious decisions that you're actually, that's like the kingdom of God as well, I think. I've found a lot that actually there is kind of some stuff that goes on that's a wee bit maybe marginal, pushing a certain agenda or something. And if you can resist that, that's actually quite powerful. And sometimes you do get, especially in my line of work, you get conflicts between, you know, how am I going to, you know, it might be someone's interests against someone else's interests or the organisation's interests, and how do you deal with that? So it's like working out, you really do need to seek God on those things. I think often they're quite finely balanced, and you've got to work out where your loyalty is versus, you know, what God's saying about the situation and what your true obligations are. So I don't know, it's a bit general and probably boring, but yeah, that's something.
It's good. Great answers, guys. So in terms of professionalism, professional boundaries against being a human being with compassion, full of Christ's love for your fellow man, have you ever had any moments where you've found it really difficult to judge, am I being unprofessional here? Am I doing something foolish for my job? Or do you know, if maybe you've got a distressed colleague, maybe there's something, and it takes you out of the social construct, I guess, of what this relationship, the limits of it are, and where you have to reach past that into a person's life, not a title or a boss or a job or a colleague. Have you got any moments like that where you've had to go, I have something to give here, I have some light to reflect, Have you got any moments like that that you could share where you've pushed past that and gone, and maybe it's backfired horribly, maybe you lost your job, or anything like that? Has anybody got anything that springs to mind?
I don't know if you guys remember Alan Scott, who came a couple of years ago, and I talked to him about this, and he was very much of the opinion that you don't do it at work, you don't get too spiritual at work, which is an interesting one because I don't know if I agree with him, but I have had twice where at work trying to hear God, and I think I spoke about it once up the front, where a guy came in and he walked into the office and I just had this word come across that it was chronic fatigue. And so I waited till my boss left. He was a client, and I was like, right, I'm just going to do this. And I asked him, do you have chronic fatigue, just straight out? And he didn't, and he was really disturbed that I'd asked the question. And so it felt like a huge backfire, but actually in the end, he and I had a lot of good talks. He actually had depression, so we had a lot of good talks around that. But it was probably borderline because, this is the client. And the other thing I've had is the boss's wife coming in wouldn't stop going on about her foot, pain in her foot. So eventually I said, can I pray for you? And she was really taken aback because they were very anti my belief. It's a hard call, that one, whether you do it or not. I've been reading, I can't remember the name of the book, but about hearing from God. And he talks about not being a shotgun, where you just shoot at everything, where you specifically do what God's asked you. There's a biblical principle that we do pray for people and heal people, but he was saying perhaps it's an idea not just to shoot at everything that moves and you wait for God to say, this is the one I want you to jump at. So with that, also trying to duck the, doing the stuff. So that didn't answer any questions.
That's good. It's all good. I wonder if sometimes that issue of like, is it professional or is it not, sometimes arises, or it's like a top-down thing being like, you don't behave like this. And it's probably the shared thing that we would agree, like, I think something I've been thinking about a lot this week and actually in preparation for this was the idea of like, what does light look like for me? And it should always elevate people's dignity. And I think if it ever erodes at that, then that's kind of like mucking up the mirror, right? And I think that totally tarnishes how we come across. And so I think if we're known as people, and this is kind of going back to what I said at the start, is if we're known of people that are gracious and are not trying to just push an agenda all the time, but we're there as people who care deeply about people, then when those moments of expression of faith come up, they're actually always life-giving, they're always giving dignity where it otherwise is missing. And so I think it's back to that approach of, well, if how we are as people is welcomed in an environment because it's good news, then you actually, the conflict kind of disappears. Your presence is now welcomed in that place, as opposed to, you want to tone that down? Because if we're being told to tone down, sometimes it's actually just because our approach sucks and we need to acknowledge that sometimes. So yeah.
Just 2 days ago, I was talking to a couple of women, I think morning tea with them, and one of them, she's really very atheist, and they have a mutual friend who is a born-again Christian who is really evangelical and always trying to kind of find moments with this one particular woman. It gets you back up. And she was saying to me, every time I see her, she's trying to convert me. And I'm the last person that she should be trying to talk to about God. And I was like, I understand. I said, but if you ever do want to talk about God, you know where to find me. And we had a joke about it, and it sort of broke the tension because she knows that I'm a Christian. But I think you can sometimes do more damage than good if you're forcing it on people. And I never wanted to be that nerd Christian. Never, ever. And so sometimes it's easier to just be the easygoing one who's there when it gets real.
I was trying to think of sort of examples of my work, and I've had a few where people have said something that indicates they are a Christian. We have worked quite a bit with Māori clients, and their spirituality is quite natural, so that's kind of not such a barrier. If someone lets me know that they are a Christian or and they're quite stressed, then, you know, I might say that I'm praying for them or something. But otherwise, probably not really. But I do pray for people a lot if I know they're going through stuff. And then sometimes something will happen that's actually quite miraculous and you're like, oh, now I kind of wish I could tell them that I was praying, but they actually have done that. But, yeah.
Are there any obvious questions that you guys might have as we head into our kind of last 10 minutes that we might have completely ignored? Cool. I had a brilliant question right here too. Chocolate, yeah. Cool. Okay, so I have a guy that I work with and he's not a Christian, and about once every 3 months, we'll sit down and we'll just talk for like an hour, just about everything, like everything in his life kind of opens up and then closes again. And he knows church is here, he knows physically where the church is, he's been in here, he knows who I am, and he knows that I'm there. And, you know, over the course of his year, we might have 3, 4, 5 great yarns about stuff, and it's a real kind of slow-burning conversation with a lot of repetition, obviously, you know, where you repeat obvious stuff, or you don't say anything at all and you just listen. There's a lot of stuff. In another example, a woman I worked with, she was an atheist, completely atheist, very firmly, strongly, and decisively atheist, and she was my biggest defender. She was viciously defensive of anybody who would come at me, whether they saw, whether they would question Christ in my life, or she was great. She was one of my great, the best person I've ever worked with. Taught me everything I knew. Just a wonderful, wonderful woman. And there was one time I remember we were out after work having drinks, and I wasn't drinking as much as somebody thought I should be drinking, and they had been drinking quite a lot more than I think maybe they should have been drinking on a regular basis. And she was right up in my face. And I was sitting there, and interestingly enough, my friend, her name is Faith, and she just went off at this woman and really got aggro. And I wasn't bothered at all because I'm quite used to defending my life choices. But she was like a bulldog, and she was in there and she cut this other person right down to size and sent her off back into the bowels of the pub. And it was really, really interesting, those two really interesting relationships that I've had, and, you know, where there's one who's just right, come around, knock on your door, let's have a yarn. This is still an issue. This is, you know, I don't really know what I'm doing about this. And then this other person who is vigorously defensive. Have you got any stories of people in your life from workplaces or schools, committees, boards, or anything like that where that's surprised you with their response?
I work a lot with manufacturers, so I'm quite often in workshops with nude women on the walls, and, you know, the whole lot. So there's a particular group that I'm designing a machine gun for, and it's an ethical one. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, sure enough, I went to their workshop to help them assemble their first gun, and there's the nude woman kissing each other on the wall. There's a whole lot, and I noticed that the two main guys are being speaking very cleanly, and one of them keeps telling the other one off when he's halfway through sentences, and they keep going outside to smoke and everything. So eventually, because I was there till about 1 a.m. helping them, and eventually I asked them, you know, what's going on? And the main guy said, "Oh, well, we know you're a Christian." So, so they were trying to be really clean and nice, and it's really interesting because I get on really well with the two, and I actually hang out with one of the guys now a bit, by his choice rather than me asking if he wants to. He invites me to stuff, and it strikes you as odd that there's polar differences between the two of us, but he still wants to be around it. You know, he would be prepared to clean up his act around me, yeah, it's just interesting that the light attracts what it attracts.
I found a few sort of conversations I've had with atheists. They're really interesting, and I like the fact that someone has thought enough about what they believe to decide to make a conscious choice, basically. And usually, most atheists have well reasoned arguments behind that. So I think that's probably why a lot of atheists do respect Christians. A lot obviously don't, but probably like vice versa. I think that atheists respect the fact that we have obviously thought about what we believe. Assuming we have, and can give an answer for what we believe and are prepared to engage in conversation about it, because I think that that's often what people want, is just to, they're quite interested in the sort of philosophy of life and human existence and things. So I think being prepared to engage in those conversations, might not lead anywhere, but it's still a good yarn anyway, I suppose. I don't know, anyone else?
So, leading on to one of our final questions, where is it? Living as light and darkness, darkness that a light that cannot be overcome by darkness. So, talking about the aspect of being reflective. So, how? Here we go. Just in case we forgot, here's my torch, source, and reflection, and there's the light going in the darkness. There it is, there it is, there it is. Yeah, I can't see behind me. That's great though, isn't it? Because it's going behind me. I don't even know. What are some things that you do in your life when you go into an environment of darkness or a different context, a context without Christ, and you are aware, I'm the light, I'm going into this environment. How do I maintain my reflectiveness? How do I, because a mirror, when it's murky, when it's cracked, when it's broken, dusty, it distorts the image and it distorts the light. And that's what you were talking about earlier before when we, when we say, what do people think about when they think of Christians? They think of the distortions from faulty reflectors, where you've got someone who hasn't got a clear, clear direction to the source. They're reflecting something of the source, but not enough. Because it's almost like they've forgotten that their responsibility is not to be the source. You are not the source. You are not Christ. It's not our job to go out there and save everybody and do everything that needs done. Our responsibility is just to be that vessel, that reflector, that channel. So what are some thoughts you've had, some decisions you've taken, things that you do maybe regularly in your life to maintain your reflective qualities? It was really funny when I said to these guys, can you come on the panel? They were like, oh, crikey, I better get my light out from under the bushel. I said, well, you've got a week, okay? You've got a week and a half to be shiny and get some good stories. No, that's a joke. They're all wonderful. But what are some things, some thoughts you've had, decisions you've taken, things that you do in your personal life, if you're happy to share, where that helps you maintain a healthy angle to the source, that you reflect cleanly without distortion? Obviously we have our bad days and our good days, but what are some of those in terms of how it relates to intentional living and making decisions and taking responsibility for your task, which is to be reflective? So how do you maintain that?
Can I start again? I was thinking about, because you asked a similar question when you asked us to go on here, and I was thinking about it, and you've kind of covered it before, and I don't know how much of it is actually intentional and how much of it is just layered into who we've become and who we're becoming. So not so much that I'm intentionally trying to be light. I'm probably more intentional about trying not to become darkness. So it's just quite interesting. It's, for me, I don't feel that much like I'm really trying hard to be anything.
Okay, I'm stuck with the mic. I think I've almost got... there is that approach where you'd go, you read your Bible and you pray three times a day, or you there's some of those obvious things. The big obvious thing for me would be the company I keep around me. And so
amongst here, there's a few people, Johnny or Sam or Emma, and that I'll hang out with, and you go really deep and really close with a few people who are on that same wavelength as you, and they, by nature, rub off of you. Peer pressure doesn't have to be a bad thing, so putting yourself around those people is really important. But I've got another approach, which is kind of a different one, and it's based around the idea of proximity. I think Jesus modeled this best in that his light was only worthwhile when it was in the darkness as well. You know what I mean? And so by very nature of going into dark places, we are being reflective. And I think sometimes we spend all this time making sure that we're reflective, but then don't even go anywhere with that. And I think it's actually really important to take that. There's that sort of proximity effect. So isn't when I moved out of home, I moved into Strathmore, into some of like the lower socioeconomic flatting, or like council flats and stuff like that. And there was a lot of brokenness around that area. And I remember my parents being like, "Oh, you know, you don't have to move into a place like that to be effective." And it was, you know, you're more likely to become like that rather than influence that. Which, looking back on that, I'm like, that's a light illuminates, it doesn't get smothered by darkness. But anyhow, but there's that idea that, which often occurs in Christian circles, is that we just become a clique of Christians that huddle together, you know, make sure that we don't get dirtied by the darkness, or we don't go out into these places and actually engage with the world. And I think that in and of itself actually murkies our light, or it's the same thing as just covering it up. It's putting it under a bushel. Or is that, what is a bushel? Yeah.
Is it? It's smothery. I think it's
like a bag of stuff. A bowl or a bag, okay, yeah. Anyhow, so I think, I think there's do those things. Read your Bible. I'm speaking to myself, I don't do that enough. But, you know, prayer, put the right people around you. Be in places that fill you up. There's that classic line, you know, it's like, we need more and more of God because we leak. So we just, you know, fill yourselves up, definitely. But actually move into spaces where Christ isn't. And I think, you know, we're really good as Christians about talking about how we need to care for the poor, but we don't even know any poor. And so there's that proximity thing that's totally lacking. And so we don't engage with brokenness in the world. I've got a friend who, I'm not going to name names for, so I've got a friend who tried to kill himself the other week, and another really, or a few really close friends, their names were basically written in his suicide letter as to how important they've been in his life, and just singing their praises and stuff like this. But he didn't succeed, thankfully. But I was thinking about that and thinking the fact that their names appeared as moments of light in his life, that, you know, they've engaged in a world which is so broken and so dark, that they're present in that. And it would be far worse if our names, as a metaphor, I suppose, if our names, or even literally, our names aren't present in those spaces. So, yeah. So I think just being in the dark is a really, really important step.
So a couple of examples. One was when I, like I said, I sort of, you know, got real with my walk with God when I was like 17, and then went to a student hostel when I was 18. And in the sense that there's a lot of drinking and so on in those hostels, that's, you know, they can be fairly dark places. And I've been at a Salvation Army church, I was like, right, I'm not going to drink at all my first year. And I didn't. And that really, so sometimes making those sorts of conscious choices just kind of set you apart anyway and kind of keep you safe. And you're sort of a touch point for people around you, I guess, that you know, someone else is doing it, so it's okay. And the other thing which I haven't really talked about was just with our children, and I mean, we are their light, you know, a reflector of God's light for them, and that's probably where I struggle the most, I think, is to maintain that, because I have a short fuse often. Yeah, that's right, yeah. It just wears you down. But also I think they go out into their schools and my five... Oh, we're just not here. My five-year-old had issues at school already with, you know, some bullying. She was being one of the bullies. and it's like, that's so hard is, yeah, then you're equipping your kids to... be light in that situation, and now she seems to be getting the message, thankfully, that how to be kind to people. But, you know, she got into a peer group and that's what they were doing. And so it's, yeah, trying to equip your kids with the skills that they need, because they go out into these, you know, they go into schools, they may or may not be Christian schools, but stuff's still going on. And it's hard not to be there all the time where you can actually help them through that. So you've got to really kind of give them the tools that they need and be able to relate them to them in a way that they want to be that light as well. So, yeah, that's hard.
Really quick. I've got the, so kind of the other end of that as well. There's a boy in our eldest school who is super wayward and, you know, walking around the streets at 9 o'clock at night, and parents are druggies. And so the kind of one that you don't want your kids to be around, and kind of hoped he would be expelled from the last thing that he did. Anyway, he's befriended Ben, and you're now on the other end of it going, oh, we want you to be a light, but maybe not to him. So, it's, yeah. Yeah. So then, yeah, then you put on the seat, in the hot seat, yeah.
I read a few things about that recently, actually, that you've all kind of touched on about that. It's a whole nother session about parenting and, you know, when is my child a light and when am I, you know, lighting the torch, and the stages and decisions about when you send them off into the darkness and that kind of stuff. But great answers, everybody. We're going to wrap it up quite shortly and get Andrea to muster the kids and come in. The kids are going to have a session with the mum. So just to wrap up on that, there's two really, really awesome thoughts that you guys have given. And I loved that idea of the kids thing, because it really does show what we were saying about intentional versus natural, and the way you raise a child and the way it should go. Intentional decisions on the part of the parent become natural ones on the part of the child. And that's where we have all kind of found ourselves over the talk, and maybe you have as well, where you've gone, oh, it's not intentional every day because it's so natural. And that's the best way to be reflective, isn't it? You know, it's those years and those times, those hard, gritty times where you've made decisions, stopped making decisions because they're second nature. And that's a really great way to sum up intentional living around being a light in the darkness. Another really great, strong thought that, thank you for sharing that, Kirk, about being the name on that list. You just can't argue with that, can you? That's it. So there's no illustration or anything more we can add to that. So thank you guys. And thanks to our panellists. Great job. Leave the chairs out, because the mums are... I think the mums are going to come out. The kids are going to come out and pray for the mums. So if we just twiddle our fingers for a couple of minutes while the kids... kids come out, and Andrea will take us through to the next stage.